Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Lincoln Ware has long been a voice on local airwaves, with a particular focus of facilitating conversations and debate among the city's Black community. That role was critical during and after the civil unrest in Cincinnati 20 years ago. I spoke with Lincoln Ware earlier. Here is our pre-recorded interview. And joining us now is the host of The Lincoln Ware Show, Lincoln Ware. Lincoln, welcome to our program.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
We're doing well. So glad you could be with us to talk about the events of 20 years ago. So let's go back to 2001. The buzz was relatively new on the radio airwaves in our area. You started about a year before. And I was hoping you could just shed some light for our listeners on what you saw in that period, the role the buzz was playing, this news station, as people needed to vent and to talk about what was happening.
And that was key right there. We were new. We were just, you know, starting to build our audience, and more people were finding out about us. We had a full, you know, we're not like now, you know, we don't have talk all day long, but then we had talk from morning till night, and we had a great lineup of hosts, and people were listening in all during the day, and they were able to vent, talk about their problems they were having with, you know, police, city government, politicians, and everything. So it was a place to vent, to get your stories heard, and people would listen and comment on.
And you probably had an idea when launching the buzz about what role the station would play in the community. Did these events change that at all, or did it help you better understand your role?
Well, we knew what was going on because I worked at WCIN. I had a show called 1480 Talk, and it was, you know, CIN didn't have the resources as that the buzz had. So, you know, we did a few hours of talk every day and we played music, but you could get a sense of how people were really ready for a full-time African-American talk station. And Ross Love knew that. And when he bought the buzz, he was ready to go with the, you know, the African-American format with talk radio. So things fell into place and we knew what we had to do. We had sports, which had the African-American slant on it. We had a sports talk show. We had Nate Livingston, who was an activist back then. I know you may not. I don't know. Are you from Cincinnati? Do you remember the name of Nate Livingston?
Oh, yes.
Okay. He used to work. He was on the air at the buzz. And so we had a full lineup. I was on the air. Jay Love was on the air. So we knew what the people wanted and we gave it to them.
Well, let's talk about the civil unrest as it emerged. I understand you weren't actually on the air as it was breaking out, but you had to go downtown to see what was happening. Tell us what you saw, Lincoln.
I saw streets being blocked off and I could see a lot of beanbag. You know, what do they call them? The shotgun bean bags. So a lot of those being shot. I even felt some pieces of that at one point. I was like, man, I'm a little too close to this because these things are starting to hurt.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I was trying to weave myself around the barricades they had. And I ran into this lady. Her name was Fatima. And she was a caller on occasion. I can't think of her last name. And I think she's still alive now. Her name was Fatima. And she lived down in Over the Rhine. So she was taking me through the back alleys to avoid the streets being blocked off so we could get to another position. And as we were doing this, I'm running through back alleys and talking on the phone and it's going over the air. And I mean, it was like you were right there. It was, you know, the only thing that was missing was a video camera. But I put people right down in the heart of the uprising. Trash cans being turned over. Down at the House of Adam, they threw a can through the window and, you know, they were a little upset at the House of Adam as what had just happened. And it was, you know, we brought the action right to the radio.
We're talking with Lincoln Ware, the host of The Lincoln Ware Show, and reflecting on 20 years since that civil unrest in Cincinnati. As somebody who was in tune with the community prior to this unrest, did it surprise you that it had boiled over into the streets like that?
No, it didn't. I knew it was, you know, it was a powder keg and all it was going to take was one more shooting of an unarmed Black person by police to set things off. And when, you know, they were taking too much time coming back to the public, telling the public what happened in those shootings, and people were just frustrated and they were at a boiling point. And, you know, all it just took that one shooting and that was it. And people were, you know, they were ready to take to the streets. Everything fell into place. The weather was nice. It wasn't cold outside and things just fell into place. It was a nice summer spring day and everything was there.
Talk a little bit about how you felt about it. I mean, you were down there and you were bringing, as you said, the action to the radio airwaves. But were you able at all to find a moment to kind of reflect on what it was you witnessed just as a citizen of this community?
Well, I didn't like to see the damage. I hate to see the city being damaged and torn, you know, fires and things like that. I hated to see Devereaux's being looted down at Finley Market. I watched that in progress, and I gave a blow-by-blow description of how they threw a window, threw a garbage can through Devereaux's, and people came from everywhere, and they had cleaned that store out in less than 10 minutes. It was unbelievable what I saw. And you feel bad for the people that own Devereaux's, but, you know, when people are rioting and doing stuff, they don't care pretty much who owns the store. They just want to do some damage.
What were those conversations like at the Buzz? Because obviously there's support for people expressing their frustrations about these deadly shootings involving the police. But at the same time, these were businesses owned by Black people that were damaged.
Well, some of them were, yes. And, you know, you hate to see that. And the bosses at the Buzz back then, Ross Love, Steve Love, you know, they didn't want us to incite people while we were giving, you know, telling people what was going on. They were like, well, tone it down a little. Let's not incite people to come downtown and do more damage that's being done. So we were told, you know, tell us what was going on, but just, you know, don't entice people to come down and participate.
We're talking with Lincoln Ware, the host of the Lincoln Ware Show, as we reflect on 20 years since civil unrest in Cincinnati. And Lincoln, we saw more civil unrest here and in large cities and small cities, even all across this country, in response to more Black people being killed at the hands of police. Before we talk about the more current events, can you share your thoughts, your observations on Cincinnati since 2001? Do you think the city has grown and learned at all?
Oh, yeah, by leaps and bounds. One thing that came out of those riots were the collaborative agreement with the police department, and things changed there drastically. So I think with that change, you know, people began to, you know, think that things were getting better here in Cincinnati. Then, of course, we went through the boycott period, which, of course, me being in radio, we need advertisements to stay alive. So I wasn't in favor of the boycott. I took a lot of heat from people on that. I wasn't a big fan of the boycott. But I think the boycott helped out a lot. I would never admit it, but yeah, I think the boycott did help. But back in those days, we needed, you know, people like the Jazz Festival, the Cincinnati Riverfront Music Festival. We needed people like that to advertise with us. They moved out of Cincinnati for a couple of years, took it to Detroit during the boycott. Concerts, we didn't have concerts coming into town to advertise at the radio station. So it hurt us, but it helped Cincinnati.
That's so interesting to consider that perspective, that a lot of these particularly Black-oriented events like Jazz Fest, and we had heard from Damon Lynch earlier that Bill Cosby was one of the first major acts to pull out of coming to Cincinnati, and that, you know, these are obvious advertisers for your airwaves. And so here you are facilitating these conversations and then being challenged economically yourselves.
And not just me. I remember James Brown broke the boycott. And I think it was Taste of Cincinnati. They brought him in to sing James Brown. And they actually threw pennies at James Brown on the stage and booed him. And to see that sight, I was like, oh, man, this has got to end. This can't continue. The Godfather of Soul, people were booing him, throwing pennies at him on stage. It was unbelievable.
Well, let's talk about the events of last year. Obviously, we're seeing the justice system moved forward on a variety of cases involving those high-profile killings of Black people last year at the hands of police. What did you see different as you look at the events of 2020 and reflect on the events of 2001?
2001, there were mainly 99% Black folks participating in the riots, uprising, whatever you want to call it. It was 99% Blacks. This one in 2020, you saw, looked like almost maybe 70-30. I'm not sure. Maybe 50-50 in some cases. I was shocked at how many white people were participating in the events of 2020. That was the biggest shock to me. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think back in 2001, all those shootings that took place, they were, you know, you would just hear about it on the news. You wouldn't see anything. You know, you would read about it in the newspaper. But when you could actually see what was going on with the, you know, people with video cameras and everything like that, when people could actually see a man dying there with a police officer's knee on his neck and you actually watch him die, I think that affected everybody, Black and white. And I think that's what was the big difference there. They could actually see what was taking place. And then you had all these other things that was on video taking place. You had the case in South Carolina where the Black guy was shot in the back by the cops. And you just had so many other things going on. People were seeing this and they were fed up. They were like, this can't be happening. This is not fair. This is wrong. So it brought them out. And believe me, it made a difference.
Based on the conversations you have currently with your listeners, what are the primary areas of concern moving forward now? Are there any themes that emerge in the conversations you have today?
Economics is one. People want a fair shake when it comes to economics. They want a piece of the pie. They want businesses. Economics, and I guess the other is, low-income housing. It seems to be a big problem in Cincinnati with low-income housing. The big white developers are coming in, buying up, cheap property and displacing Black folks, and they're, you know, having to move. I think that's a big issue there. Gentrification that's going on, and there's no replacement housing for the people that are being uprooted. So that's a big concern also.
Lincoln Ware is the host of The Lincoln Ware Show on The Buzz. Lincoln, I'm a fan of your show. I appreciate you taking some time to chat with me on this program. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
And up next, we talk live with local reporters who were on the ground covering the events of 2001 and also last summer. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Joining us now live to discuss their coverage of the 2001 civil unrest and this summer's protest movement are Cincinnati Public Radio Vice President of Content, Janelle Walton. Janelle, I think this is your first appearance on Cincinnati Edition, so welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael, for having me.
We also have with us a photographer formerly with the Cincinnati Post, Melvin Greer. Melvin, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
And we have Cincinnati Inquirer Director of Photography, Kara Owsley. Kara, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Janelle, you're the new boss here, so I better start with you. Of course, people recognize your name because you were on television for a very long time at WCPO,
yes.
Our friends down the road, and you were covering the 2001 civil unrest in our city, and something strange happened. While you were reporting live from one of the scenes that were transpiring during that period, you snagged a live interview with the president of the NAACP, I understand.
That's right. It was Kwasi Mfume. I was on Vine Street. And what was interesting was that I was in the middle of my actual news story. So I had what we'd done in the live field. I had tossed to the package where everything is already recorded. The interviews are all self-contained. And I had about 20 seconds left in that package. And I saw a flock of people surrounding this one person walking down the street, but they were a little too far away for me to recognize who they were. And they got closer and closer. And I had 10 seconds before the package ended and I was going to be back out live on television. And I said, oh my God, that's the president of the NAACP. And every reporter in town wants him. The anchors wanted to get out of the newsroom. They wanted to come off of the anchor desk to talk to him because he was the first kind of national person that actually flew in to look at the damage that had happened because of the civil unrest. And I had to make a split second decision. I literally went blank, Michael. I couldn't remember his name.
Oh no.
I knew who he was and I didn't have enough time to ask the producer, like, who is the NAACP president? My mind is going blank here. So he literally came closer. I came out of the package. I stalled and stalled. And then he was within 5 feet of me. And I just raced over to him and said, I'm Janelle Walter with Channel 9 News. You are on live TV right now. He gave me the craziest look, Michael. What are you talking about?
Do you remember what his reaction was? What type of wisdom or words he shared?
First, he paused for a split second. He looked up at the camera and then it clicked. Oh, I'm actually on television. And I just remember him. He was very deliberate in his words, so I knew he wanted to be careful and he didn't want to incite, you know, more anger and more protest. But he basically took the stance of, I'm looking at the devastation, you know, what's happened here has been happening around the country, and it is wrong. And he kind of just took it from there, and we went back and forth for probably about a good 3 to 4 minutes.
In the TV news business, what was it like trying to tell these stories visually?
Oh, it was a challenge for me. I was a young reporter then. I was 30 years old, and I'd only been at Channel 9 for about, a year. You know, we had the big names back then. You know, you had Stephen Hill, Joe Webb, Lori Quinlivan, Hagit Lamour, Stacey Case. To be the reporter that was actually, you know, interviewing him at the time, and I felt like people were looking at me, oh, that's the Black reporter. She can't be fair in her coverage because she's Black and she's going to agree with everything that the protesters are saying. So I was always thinking through that and having to just always second guess as I wrote, as I talked, everything that I said, because there would be people standing around you during those live shots looking as if they were going to beat you up if you didn't say what they thought you should say because they were so angry. So you kind of had that tension from the community too.
That's Janelle Walton. She is the Vice President of Content here at Cincinnati Public Radio. Had previously been with WCPO, where she covered the 2001 civil unrest. I want to reintroduce Melvin Greer, who is a photographer formerly with the Cincinnati Post. Melvin, I know it's a delight for a lot of our listeners to hear Cincinnati Post reference. It is a missed publication. Can you talk a bit about the strategies you deploy when you go out and something like the civil unrest of 2001 is unfolding in your community, how you plan to capture it visually?
Well, you have to understand that my assignment was to go to the law and public safety meeting at City Hall.
So this was before everything really broke out. This was the starting point.
Yeah, this was, you could think of this as the kettle being put on the stove full of water, and it's going to start boiling. And that's what happened at the law and public safety. It was rather chaotic. It was out of control. People were jumping on desks, holding up signs. There was a lot of emotion coming from some of the participants. So there was a sense that something was going to take place.
I was going to say, as it does, like we know that meeting, we've talked about it this week, it did not go well. And then the events led to a demonstration outside of the police headquarters down here in the West End. And how did you mobilize?
Well, it was very simple to mobilize. I went down the steps and walked down to District 1 police headquarters with everyone else and got into various positions to make the photographs that I thought would tell the story, which was primarily but I did all the time. There were police officers out in front of District 1, so I got behind them and got photographs of people holding up signs that says, "Cops are killers." At one point, they took the American flag down. I was photographing that. They ran the flag back up, but upside down, photographed that. And it continued on into the evening, and there was just always something going on, and my job was to photograph.
Did any particular image stand out for you as the photographer?
Well, not from that evening. I think I did a pretty decent job of covering that evening. And then because I worked so much overtime, I took the next day off. So I did not photograph some of the things that Lincoln Ware was talking about, the windows being broken and all of that. So I came back the following day, after that day, and working the 3 to midnight shift. And there were always things going on, people coming downtown, riding on top of cars, shotguns shooting at those pellets and things. It was just always some hoo-ha going on. Then the next day, there were a lot of people in the streets, and, you know, something would happen, and we would all run to that, photograph that, but... As a photographer, with the experience that I had at that particular time, I always tried to work and shoot things that everybody else was not shooting. And my favorite photograph from the disturbances or the riots, whichever you choose to call it, was there was a line of mounted police. At that particular time, there were still cops on horses in Cincinnati, and they were blocking Ray Street at Central Parkway. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw this little kid run up, and he was sort of like challenging the cops and gesticulating toward them. And I went over to shoot that, and a woman came and grabbed the kid and started to pull him away from that line of cops. And some of the cops are chuckling, and it was just one of those moments where, you know, it just, I don't know, I liked it very much. It just was a whole different thing for me. And keep in mind that by this time, I knew some of the cops, not as buddies or friends, but simply because we'd be in the same place at the same time. There was one cop that was on duty then that also worked the Bengals games, and he was a Browns fan, and I'm a Browns fan. So I had a lot of photographs. It's hard to pick a photograph. It's like picking your favorite child.
Well, I'm holding that photo that you just described, Melvin, and it is quite a striking image where you have about 10 mounted Cincinnati police officers on their horses in a line. And in the foreground is an older black woman holding a young black boy by the scruff of his neck. He can't be older than 6 or 7 years old, even if that. And it's quite an image, and glad that you were able to capture that. I want to introduce or reintroduce another photographer who was with us from the Cincinnati Inquirer, the director of photography there, Kara Owsley. And Kara, I know you didn't come to Cincinnati until 2005. The unrest had, of course, subsided by then. But we saw last summer that there's always something boiling under the surface in our communities, and it overboiled again. And I was wondering if you could share with us a little bit about covering the unrest from the past summer that was caused by more tragedies involving black people killed by police underneath a once-in-a-100-year pandemic.
Yeah, so that was the big challenge, is how to safely cover the demonstrations, the protest during a pandemic. And we really just was like, okay, we'll go out with the, you know, with the mask on, the best mask that we had. We really didn't have a plan. I believe it was a Friday night. I don't remember the exact date, but it was a Friday in May. The very first protest, we found out about it was on social media. Me and one other photographer, and we go, and, you know, it starts off pretty calm. And I would say maybe at first it might have been 50 people. It's about 5 or 6 o'clock. But as the night continued, and as they continued to march through Over the Rhine, the crowd continued to grow and grow and grow. And at some point I look up and we're on I-75. So if the protesters go up there, then we go up there. It became a really, really long night. I end up having to call somebody in who was on vacation. It's like, is there any way you can come and help us out? Because at that point it was probably like midnight. And then it turned from, I would say, you know, protest to people starting to cause some damage downtown, breaking out windows and things. I do remember constantly, whenever I thought about it, would put hand sanitizer on. You know, I kept it in my camera bag. I don't know if that did anything, but I guess it was just something, you know, my subconscious that I was like, okay, I can't really wash my hands, but I can put on hand sanitizer. Not that I was touching anybody, and I tried to keep my distance as much as possible. But when the crowd became to get larger and larger, you really couldn't.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to ask about, was like, when you think about last May during this pandemic, we were still learning so much about the disease, and everywhere was pretty vacant, right? We weren't going out anywhere, and you saw vacant streets. No one was in the workplace. And so it was kind of scary to even watch from afar that there were this many people grouping together in the streets, and knowing that journalists like you had to be out there, and certainly journalists from our own organization out there. You know, these are people who are scared for their lives as it relates to police. And then you have this other thing looming over it all that has people scared for their lives too.
Yeah. And then the other challenge, I had never been in a let me go back to 2015. So in 2015, after Sam DeBose was killed by Ray Tinsing, former University of Cincinnati police officer, and I covered those protests too. Of course, it wasn't a pandemic. But the other thing then, the police, there was a huge police presence back then, but they did not use, I guess you would call them the pepper ball. You know, I don't know what the proper for terminology, but they were not shooting those things out. They did not tear gas us. So the other challenge in 2020 wasn't just the pandemic, is that I had never been tear gassed before. I had never been in a crowd. I never had to deal with that before. I never had to run from police officers putting up those pepper ball guns and shooting those out. I never had to do that. So it was quite the challenge, but I was going to stay and do my job as well.
So I've got a few minutes left. I want to make sure that I touch base with all three of you before we wrap up. And I'll start with you, Janelle. What did you learn about the role the news media plays in either telling the story or calming fears, or worse, provoking action that's untoward during a situation like 2001?
Sure. I think one of the big things that stood out to me is that collectively, we all, and this is, you know, even including, you know, Mr. Fangman, who was on earlier, you know, everybody had a certain piece of that storytelling. And we all needed to be very careful on how we did it, because I didn't want anyone else to get hurt. I didn't want anyone else to be shot or, as Kara said, you know, just injured because they were protesting. And when I look back on it, I do appreciate you know, Keith saying, hey, I realized that some of the things that I did may have come across very harsh. And I remember being at the FOP and being out there and interviewing him. And, you know, you could hear that, you know, the anger. But as he said, he was representing the police department. That was part of his job. So I just think everybody had a piece of that puzzle. And to even going forward, as Kara said, if you're out there covering it, you want to get both sides. You want to be fair to both sides so that people can really make their own decisions up about whatever is happening.
Melvin Greer was a photographer with the Cincinnati Post during the 2001 civil unrest. Melvin, you'd already been at the Post for about 27 years when this unfolded, a lot of experience. Do you realize in the moment that history is sort of unfolding before your eyes, and does that impact the way you do your job?
Well, no, I don't never thought in those terms. I always thought that my job was to photograph as honestly as I possibly could. Don't get emotionally involved. Make sure that I'm making the best photographs that represent what's going on in front of me, because I am working for the readers of our newspaper. And that's my job. And I tried to do it well. Now, if it was going to become a historic event, someone else is going to decide that, the pundits, perhaps. But when you're out working in the streets and things are happening really quick, you don't think about, I don't think about things like that, because I'm just trying to get the darn things in focus, you know, and compose them right and expose them correctly and decide which lens I'm going to use and all of these other things that I'm working on. And I think Cara can verify that also. But history, if it was historic, then so be it.
Cara, is that a similar sentiment to what you possess?
That's exactly right. I think about last summer, the only thing I did think about was we're covering civil unrest in 2020 during the middle of a pandemic. That's the only thing I did think about. My thing was I wanted to try to capture the best images as possible. I wanted to make sure I had people's names spelled correctly, and I was trying to meet my deadlines. You know, so you don't really think about, okay, what, how many people are going to be here? Is this history? Is this the biggest one? Is this bigger than 2015, 2016? I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about doing my job and doing to the best of my ability. Well, and staying safe.
Well, you are a gifted photographer, and Melvin, I think you called them getting the darn things. We're grateful to have your darn things from that period to document that history. And Janelle, hope to see you in the office soon to talk more about journalism and your experience there. Janelle, Melvin, Cara, thanks for the time you gave us today. We do so appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
If you've enjoyed this week, looking back at 20 years since the civil unrest in Cincinnati in 2001, or if you missed a segment, you can find it online at WVXU.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. This theme music was composed by Rob Fetters. Again, go to WVXU.org for more news and for all of the segments you've heard or missed here on Cincinnati Edition. We've made it to Friday. I hope you have a great weekend. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again on Monday.